Hi everyone, today's parak of Rambam is the 23rd chapter of Hilchos Ishos. In this parak, the Rambam discusses various details of commitments that can be taken upon one of the parties or waived by one of the parties with regards to setting up obligations prior to and after the marriage has already begun. Halacha Aleph. Ha'isha shehisneis al-baila levatel zuchos midvarim shezocha bahen abal. If a wife makes a stipulation with her husband to nullify one of the various rights which the husband otherwise would have received in marriage. Im kasavla v'uda arusa, if he's written over this right to her while they are in a stage of betrothal, kodem hanisuin, prior to that second stage of marriage, enum tzarech l'knos miyado, then there is no need for a formal act of acquisition. El koma shekasavla kaya, rather anything that he writes over to her is going to be binding. Im kasavla achar hanisuin, however, if he writes over this right back to her after the later stage of marriage, tzarech l'knos miyado, in that case an act of formal acquisition is required. Halacha Beis. Hisna ima shlo yulo din udvar minachseha. If the husband has stipulated with his wife that he won't have any involvement in her assets, im michra v'nana michra matanta kayim. If she sells or gives away these assets, so then that sale or gift is binding. Aba ochel perusein kol zman shein berushusa. However, as long as it remains in her domain, she hasn't sold or given these away, so then he has the right to their produce. Im kanum yado kishi arusa shein lo din udvar minachseha. However, if he had made an act of formal acquisition waiving this right while they were in a state of betrothal, that he won't have any involvement in her assets, harisidik atam gufakarka. In that case, he's removed himself from the actual field itself, and he will not have any claim to the produce from those fields at all. Even if he afterwards tries to claim he didn't mean this, even if the man claims that I didn't realize what this would entail, I thought that it would mean that if she had sold it, then it would be a valid sale. But I didn't realize I would lose out on any rights to the produce while she has the assets, because a person doesn't want to marry a woman without any assets. Nonetheless, ain shomen lo, elik farsi lik atzom mi gofakarka. He has still removed himself from the actual base of the land itself, and therefore we don't listen to him. Halacha Gimel. Hisna ima shelo yochal peros nachseha. If the husband had stipulated with his wife that he won't consume the produce from her assets, harizeh ein ochal perosan. So then he's not able to eat those fruits. Avo mochran es peros velochin behen karka hu ochal perosan. However, he is able to take those fruits, sell them, use that money to purchase new land, and then from that land he will be able to consume its fruit. Shelo si lik atzom elamik peros nachasam elu bobat. Because he only removed himself from the produce of these particular assets themselves and nothing more. Halacha Dalet. Hisna ima shelo yochal peros nechseha, velo peir perosehen. If the husband has stipulated that he won't benefit from the produce of her assets, nor from the produce of its produce, in that case, lokan aperos, he takes those fruits, vikonim hem karka, he uses them to buy land, vilokan peros karka zu, and he uses the produce from that new land, vikonim hem karka shnia, and with that he buys a second field, vuhu ochel peros elu, shein peir peros peros. Because in that case, he is able to have the produce from that second bought field, because those are the produce from the produce of the produce. If I hand over Tomit, and so the matter goes on forever, until the point where he stipulates that he won't have any of its produce or its produce's produce until the end. And then at that point, if he makes such a stipulation, he won't have any right to any of her produce during her lifetime. Though, to be clear, upon her death, he still will inherit her. Okay. The husband had stipulated with the wife that he won't inherit her. Hari said, lo yurashena. So in that case, he will not inherit her. However, he does have the right to the produce from her field during her lifetime. Similarly, if he had stipulated with her that he will inherit only part of her assets, or if he had stipulated that if she dies without any sons, then these possessions will go back to her father's house rather than to the husband, in that case, then it will be binding. Halacha Vav. When is that true? That's if he had stipulated before they had reached the second stage of marriage. Because something which is coming to a person, not from an inheritance from his family, but rather something which is coming to him in another way, such as a gift, such as this claim on his wife, so that he's able to stipulate that he shouldn't receive it, he shouldn't inherit it, prior to it becoming appropriate to him. However, were he to try to stipulate this after they had already reached that latter stage of marriage, in that case, his stipulation is nullified. Yerushena, he'll still inherit her kamoshi baranu, as the Rambam has already explained. Halacha Zayin. Hisna ima achar nisuin shelo yulo din udvar minachseha lo peir peroseha ad olam bechayeha uvmosa hariza eno ochel peros klal. If the husband had stipulated with his wife after they had reached the later stage of marriage that he should have no involvement in her assets nor in its produce or the produce of its produce until the end, during her lifetime and during her death, in that case, he is not able to benefit from his produce at all. However, However, if she passes away, he will still inherit her, as the Rambam has already explained. Halachas. Habal shoti yotzos anechsem b'luk. Bein shoti ma'at v'alcho peres harbe. Bein shoti harbe v'alcho peres ma'at. If a husband expends expenditures on behalf of the fields of his wife, which are classified as nechsem b'luk, whether he's expended a little bit and gained a lot, or he's expended a lot and gained a little bit, afilu achal gurus achas derech kavod, osh achal dinar echad afilu shlo derech kavod, afilu lo lochach b'peres v'ma shoti ala chavila achas shel zmoros. Even if he had only eaten one dried fig in a respectful, dignified fashion, or even had taken one coin's worth, even in a not respectful fashion, or even if he had merely taken from the produce from the field one little bundle of vines, nonetheless, mash hoti hoti, mash acha acha. In that case, it counts as if he had consumed something, and therefore that which he's expended, that which he's consumed. Hachatas, v'chenim naflu luk safim b'makom rachog, v'hoti alein hotzos, acha vion osh acha tion miyad, mi shahayu etzlo. Similarly, if a woman received money from some distant place, and then the husband spent expenditures in order to receive that money by having somebody go and bring it to him, or to go and get it out of the hands of the person who had it, and then with that money he used it to buy land, and then he consumed the fruit from that land, in accordance with that which he had expended, and in accordance with that which he had consumed, that is all that there is. Hotzi below acha. However, if he had expended and had not consumed from the field at all, or he had consumed less than the amount that he had to spend on expenditures in this particular case, so then we evaluate how much he had improved it, and we ask him how much he had expended. If there's been more benefit to the field than that which he expended, in that case, he swears by holding a holy object, such as a Sefer Torah, how much he had expended, and then he's able to be paid back for that expenditure. However, if the expenditures were more than the amount that it actually benefited in the end, in that case, he only has the degree of the expenditure in accordance with the amount that he had made the field better. For example, that he had spent $100 on improving it, but it only improved $50 worth of value. He can only have $50 worth of value, and he only receives that when he takes a swear. Halacha Yud. What is that true? That's if one divorces his wife. If a woman rebels against her husband, even if he had much of the produce, in that case, we evaluate for him how much he had consumed, and then we detract from that which was appropriate to be given to him from the expenditures, after he takes the swear, and then he receives the money. Because he didn't give it over to her in order so that she should take it and leave on her own. Similarly, if somebody had married a woman who was underage and she was married off by her mother, by her brothers, and therefore she has the ability to refuse this husband, and indeed she does refuse him. So in that case as well, if he had spent expenditures on her assets, then we see how much he had gained from it, how much he had expended, and how much he had improved the field. And then we evaluate it all, such as a sharecropper would, and that's because of the fact that he had the right to use this field. There are many different customs with regards to the dowry. There are some places that have the custom that they write beyond the actual value which is owed to it, an extra third, an extra fifth, or an extra half. You go into Shetia and Adunya Mea, the Koshu and Shechnisa Mea Vachamishim, Kadesh the Harbos, Bifnea Am, Ukshatava Ligbos, Lotigwela Mea. They write 150 rather than 100 in order so that way people will say, wow, what a large Ksuba. But then when she actually comes to collect, she only has the right to collect 100. Vishman Komoshin Ogu Lechto Pachos, and there are some places who have the custom to write less than there actually is. Vim Paskal Havilob Mea Kalim Nosenes, Shabe Mea Vesrim, O Mea Vachamishim, but Koshu and Shechnisa Lo Mea. And therefore, if they had stipulated that he would be given 100, so then they'll give 120 or 150, and they merely write 100. V'yesh mekomo shenagu lechtov shvei mana b'mana. And sometimes they have places where they just actually write what they mean. They write 100, and it actually is that 100 is owed. V'yesh mekomo shenagu shitina ishmos l'vian adunya davar katzuv shetizkashit bo hakala v'tikna bo b'sam v'kyotven. And there are some places who have the custom that the husband should have to give a certain set amount in accordance with the dowry, so that way the wife will have funds in order to adorn herself and prepare herself for the wedding. And sometimes there are places where the husband goes and gives, so to speak, a dowry from the man's side in order to give it to the wife as a gift, and it should be added on to the dowry that she's bringing in order to have it more beautiful. If somebody just writes it as a default, so then that follows the patterns of the local place. Similarly, that which the wife had made some sort of commitment to bring something into the home, so then she follows whatever the local custom is. Now, the Rambam tells us an important rule with regards to all these type of matters. The local custom is a very, very important idea, and we follow it with regards to how we will judge. The Rambam then adds a caveat. This is assuming that it's a custom which is actually spread throughout the entire area. Halacha Yud Gimel. If there was a man and woman who had agreed amongst themselves to get married, they were engaged in our modern colloquial way of using that. It does not refer to the first stage of marriage called betrothal. But Amarla, and the husband says to her, Kama at nafas esli. And he asks her, how much are you going to bring into the marriage as a dowry? Kach v'kach, and she responds with a certain amount. V'amarlo, and then she asks him, v'kama at nosein li, okosev li, and how much will you bring into the marriage from your side, or write out to me? Kach v'kach, and the husband responds with a certain amount. V'chein av, shepasek ayadei b'no, v'ito, kama at nosein levitcha, kach v'kach, v'kama at nosein levitcha, kach v'kach. And similarly, if a father does so on behalf of his son or a daughter, and the response comes from the other father, and then after that discussion, they get up and they do kiddushin, they do the first stage of marriage. In that case, they have acquired those commitments, even though there hadn't actually been any other act of formal acquisition. These are examples of things which are acquired with words alone, without any formal act. When is that true? This is true, the Rambam tells us, when it's a father setting this amount on behalf of his daughter, whether she's young or whether she's old, and when it's a father who's doing so for his son, when it's the first time that the child is getting married, because the man is so proud, so excited of the fact that his son is getting married for the first time, that he's willing to fully give over himself to this commitment with words alone. Aval ach shepasak lachoso, o isha shepasak labita, v'chein shar krovin, v'chein ach shepasak labno, o labito ben esu en shniim, lo kanu osana devarim, ad shiknu midei leposek, shitain kach v'kach. However, if it's a brother setting this amount on behalf of his sister, or a wife on behalf of her daughter, or any other relative, and similarly, if it's a father setting this amount for his son or his daughter in a second marriage, in that case, words alone are not sufficient to make this a binding commitment until they actually do an act of formal acquisition. Halacha Tezbav. Av shepasak al yad bito, lo kansa abas osa hamatana ad shechnosa baila. If a father makes a commitment on behalf of his daughter, then the daughter doesn't acquire that right until her husband actually completes the marriage with her, until he brings her to that second stage of marriage called nesua. V'chein ha-ben lo kana ad shechnos. And similarly, the son will not be able to acquire it until he does the stage of nesua. Because whenever somebody sets this sort of commitment with his words beforehand, it's always with the assumption that they'll do nesu'in. Therefore, if a man sets a certain amount to give to his son-in-law, and then the son-in-law passes away prior to having reached the stage of nesu'in with this man's daughter, and now this daughter has fallen to levirate marriage by one of the brothers of the deceased son, so the father of this girl is able to say to this brother who's standing to lever in marriage, I was willing to give it to your dead brother. I don't have any interest in giving this gift to you. This is even true if the first one was ignorant and the second one is a big tamal chacham. And this is even if it's true that the wife desires to marry this new husband, nonetheless, the father is able to pull out of this agreement. If somebody had set a certain amount of money to his son-in-law, and then this man, this father of the daughter, moves away to some faraway place, the wife is able to say to her husband, look, my father's not around. I did not make this stipulation on my own. What can I do? Either marry me, bring me to the stage of nesu'in, the higher level of marriage, without any dowry, or send me free with a bill of divorce. However, if the wife had made this commitment on her own, and she just doesn't have the capacity to pay it up, so then she is stuck in that scenario until she has the wherewithal to give over that which she had promised, or until she passes away. Now, why can't she free herself up with rebellion against her husband? Because in this case, when a wife is rebelling against the husband, she's in a state of betrothal. The husband wishes to bring her to the second stage of marriage, but she doesn't desire. That's not what's going on here. Here, the husband doesn't want her until she's willing to give over the dowry which she had promised, until she has that wherewithal. She desires to be married to him. She's the one saying to him, either do the second stage of marriage of Nisuin or set me free. When is that true? Bigdola, if we're dealing with an adult girl. Albatana, Shapaska Latzma, if we're dealing with a young girl who had made the stipulation on herself, Kovanoso Litin get, Oyechnos Blodidun. In that case, we do force the husband either to provide her with a bill of divorce, or instead to bring her to the second stage of marriage, even without actually yet receiving this dowry. Halacha Yud Zayin. Hanose Isha Upaska Imo, Shiyat Zon Espita, Kach Bekach Shanim. If a man marries a woman, and he had stipulated with her that he is going to provide support to her daughter from a different marriage for a number of years, in that case, he is obligated to support that daughter for the number of years that he had accepted upon himself. This is assuming that he had given this over at the time of the betrothal. However, if he had agreed to this, he had made this commitment not at the time of doing the betrothal, so then he's not bound by it until they make a formal act of acquisition or until he writes it out in a document or something of the sort, as Rambam will explain later in Mishnah Torah. Niskar shebesocha shanim shekiyah b'la'atzmo lezon esbita v'nisis la'acher upaska gam imo shiyah zon osah bas kach v'kach shanim. If the husband divorces his wife within the number of years that he had promised to support her daughter, and then during that time she now goes and marries another man who also makes a similar stipulation to support her daughter, in that case, lo yomar rishon im tavo lebesi azuna, the first one who had married her and made that commitment can't say, look, if you come to my house, I'll go ahead and support her. Ella molech mitzvah seh lemakom shi sham ima. Rather, he's got to go and bring the money over to the place where his wife, former wife, is and give her the money there. Similarly, the first and second husband can claim to this woman that, look, we'll support her together. You only need her to support her once, so look, we'll just support her jointly. Rather, one of them will actually support her, and the other one will just give her the value of support. If the daughter dies during the time that had been set, the husband nonetheless is obligated in her sustenance. And therefore, these two husbands, the first husband who then divorced her and the second husband, will both be obligated to give the mother this sustenance. If these two men, the first and second husband, who had promised to support this daughter, both pass away, if there had been an act of formal acquisition or they'd obligated themselves through a document, so then in that case, the mother, the daughter, will count as a creditor in a document which has more power, a Baal Chov of the Shtar has more power than just a Baal Chov al Peh, v'toref es moseha v'nechseihan v'shubadim ad sof etzman shepasku. And therefore, she can go and claim this support from leaned property that he might have had property and sold away. She can go and take that property away from the buyer until the end of the time when they had set this money for. V'impasku v'shas kedushin v'lo hayah sham kenyan. And had this been set at the time of the betrothal, and there hadn't been any active formal acquisition, in that case, these aren't things which are intended to be written down, and therefore she has no ability to go and tear this property away, to seize it from people who had bought it from him in order to receive the support that she is owed. Have a wonderful day.